Is it recording? Okay, here we go. Okay, so hi, welcome to the new conversations for Negris. And this was supposed to be like a whole fancy start and everything, but then we got into this conversation, and then I was like, why aren't we recording this?
Because it was good.
Because it was super good. So this will be the unofficial, this will be the chill episode. And then we do another thing. So, oh wait, okay. See, now I didn't do the thing where I start. Okay, so we're at 25 minutes. So 26, 26, 36, 36, 56. So at 56 minutes, we have to keep an eye on the thing. Go over. So hi, we were actually talking about something else entirely, and then John Patrick, say hello, John Patrick,
Hello, everyone.
was talking about the yet another reason why Canada kicks the butt of America, because getting an education is actually not something that they make a difficult thing that only this tiny group of people can achieve. And talking about going into the field of therapy and stuff, and what the reasons for that is. And I'll say my excitement about that sort of amped up after I attended the ASECT, which is the American Association of Sexuality Educators and Therapists. Yay. And was invited there to do a keynote, and then totally rocked it, I have to say. I wish they had recorded it. But then
Really?
afterwards,
They
I
didn't record
spent,
it?
no, don't even get me started. And it was actually quite devastating. The reason that they never did was because they were like, well, no one ever bought it. Like, the whole purpose of recording keynotes is that people then buy the DVD of the topic of the session, but apparently they weren't doing it, and I was like, yeah, but it wasn't me, so of
Yeah.
course they weren't buying it. But packed
Absolutely.
audience, SRO, standing ovation, because it was also, this is very specific. Most plenaries are not interesting in terms of something that would be a takeaway for folks. You can basically, in most plenary sessions, like, take notes and be like, okay, well, this is what I learned here, versus my sort of storytelling approach, my sneak lessons. But what was cool was that I was talking to a bunch of therapists afterwards who were going on and on about how they had, just from listening to me speak for an hour, a shift in perception of who their clientele was when they were dealing with kinky folks. And then John Patrick had brought up the change to the DSM, depathologizing SM as something that needs to be directly addressed. Regardless, versus it needs to be something that's addressed in therapy if the person coming in has that as an issue they want to address. And then you were talking about how they have this fucking awesome program.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. It's called the Toronto Institute for Relational Psychotherapy. A friend of mine who I met through a local burlesque troupe that I stage manage for, because that's just how the world works.
Because rad.
Because rad. Actually, and she had actually she retired from performing because she was going to start doing therapy and counseling full time. And I've had it in my head that this was a career path that it's a career path that I've been pulled towards for, I want to say, like 6 or 7 years, maybe even a bit longer than that. And was always, when I left theater, my plan, when I got tired of doing theater in Toronto, touring was always super fun, but doing theater in Toronto was a little bit pants because I ended up having to do. I ended up just doing like full seasons of sitcoms on stage, and I got really tired of that. So I left theater, and my plan was to go to school to train as a therapist. But then the corporate world kind of came calling, and I had that moment of, well, I could go back to school and spend a lot of money, or I could do close to what I've been doing in theater for about twice as much money.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was pretty. I don't begrudge the time that I spent in corporate land, but it's certainly not something that I want to do anymore.
Right.
So this Toronto Institute for Relational Psychotherapy seems it's actually it's the assuming you get accepted, you have to write an essay about why you are interested in training at their school. So I'm very interested in trying to write a two-page essay that basically says, because I'm a kinky person who's interested in taking care of people.
Right.
And I think that you and I have talked about this before. I don't think we've talked about it at a time that things have been recording, but it's the
No.
difference between I have in the past and still am uncomfortable with the idea of teaching a class because I'm much more interested in helping an individual person. And so the idea of saying kind of more the perception that I've had, which I'm totally prepared to be proven wrong about, but the perception that I've had is that teaching a class tends to involve a lot of broad strokes, general ideas. And I'm much more interested in being able to sit down with an individual person and
Sure.
say, let's talk about the challenges that you're having, and let's try to figure out some way of working to make those challenges go away.
Well, I think that the difference between two, I would say, the analogy that brings that sprung to mind is the analogy of going to church, right? If you go to church and you have this experience of everyone together, the shared experience of singing and praising whatever deity or praising da 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 da, but then you also do want that one-on-one time with the spiritual advisor. You want to like tell them your stuff, you know. And in school, for example, it's great to have a classroom full of people, but then it's also wonderful to have a session with your professor where you go and you have your half hour of office hours and, you know, you sit with them individually. The point of larger classes, I believe, one of the most important things, and the amazing and awesome Patrick Mulcahy, King of the World, may he always live forever, brought this up in an article that he wrote. When I should make a note to link to that, where he was talking about one of the most important things that we do is bring together in the room to see each other and to be in the same space. That is the grounding point. And then the next step up is because then you get to share stories more so than anything else. And I think possibly because a lot of classes that you're teaching, I mean, I don't teach any hard skill classes really. And I think a lot of the classes that you're presenting are hard skill classes. And so it is, I think, probably going to feel very different. You know, if someone's having a hard time with a tie, you cannot stop the entire class. And everyone gather around, let's watch this person have a problem with a tie. In a relationship class, a person says, I have this specific problem. I can, you know, that person is group permission, right? And you can have that degree of conversation, but it's going to be very different depending on the topic, depending on the atmosphere.
I totally agree. What's interesting for me is that I've only ever taught one class. And the class that I taught was not a practical class. It was a theoretical class. It was about, it was at Come As You Are, which is one of our fantastic local sex shops here in Toronto. And
Why did I think you taught more stuff?
I, well, you know what's interesting is that I feel like maybe I've thrown a lot of things. Like I've organized workshops. I've organized workshops in Toronto for Madison Young, for Midori. I've done three gurus here with Great Answer. Like I've facilitated a lot of things, but I haven't actually done them myself. And doing the Why of Power, which was the Come As You Are class, was my first one to sort of see, okay, maybe this is something. Maybe this is something that I actually do want to do. And coming out of that experience, which was positive, did actually tell me that no, that isn't really something that I want to do. I, in some ways, for the reasons that I've just talked about, but I think for another reason is the other reason why it's not something that I'm pulled towards is because the way in which, and this is really interesting because this throws back to like the first conversation that we had, the way in which I talk is not necessarily suited for a large group of humans to watch me because of the And if there are people who are listening to this podcast for the very first time, which is possible, welcome. But I've had a stutter ever since I've been speaking. And one of the things that my stutter has done in terms of the way the way that I speak and the cadence and the rhythm and the pace of my speech is that I will tend to take very long pauses before saying something if I feel like my stutter won't necessarily let me get a thought out quickly.
And I just thought it added gravitas, so that's just me.
Well, and I think that if I'm talking with one person, it can come across as gravitas and like, thank you. But if I'm sitting in front of a group of people, it might end up looking like he doesn't actually know what he's going to say. And no, but here's the thing. The best classes that I have ever sat on are done by people who not only know their shit, but who can work a room.
Right.
And not everybody can work a room. You have some people who are fucking skilled, but who cannot work a room in the same way.
Yeah, teaching and presenting issues is its own whole freaking episode. My God. Make a note. Talk about presenting. We'll have that episode at some point because, God, I have plenty of things to say about that. But the therapy thing.
Yes.
First of all, I am highly envious. I'm just like, yes, check mark another reason to move to Canada. A, America hates Black people even more now. And B, it's not getting better. And they're rolling back the law so that they can incarcerate us that much more easily. And then we can't vote. Woohoo!
That is some bullshit.
But I digress. first of all, I love the fact that there's a program such as that. And perhaps there is something like that in the U.S. and I just don't know about it.
Yeah.
But what I think is super important about having people who are kink identified and very powerfully kink identified as therapists is that, as you say, it's not just that I have this empathy, it's not just I have sympathy, now I have empathy for your plight, but it's going to be a very different conversation, as you said, if you don't have to, I think you might have said this offline before, I was like, let's record this shit, my God.
Yeah.
But it's important because, yes, you don't have to go and explain very basic terms. But it's also important in that you have a situation where you have someone who has that shared experience to whatever extent they possibly can. And I will liken it to the fact that I can talk to a therapist about my issues around social anxiety, for an example. And if someone who doesn't have social anxiety, they can clinically get it, but they're not going to understand when I talk about like walk into a room and getting that clenching feeling. If I have a therapist who is white and I'm like, and I say to them, well, I walked in and got the look, they're going to need clarification as to what I mean. Whereas a Black person is going to be like, and right. I have now saved 10 minutes on the clock of my money and my time explaining what I mean by that.
Because they get the shorthand.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. There are some situations where, I think it'd be so fantastic for someone who identifies as a slave, for example, not have to sit there and talk about why they identify as a slave versus a submissive, whereas someone who's kinky will probably accept that you've done your homework on that.
Right. But there's also the thing, too, of a therapist who has no degree of kink awareness at all.
Right.
If you were to walk into that room and you were to talk about being a slave for a non-kink aware therapist, the degree of red flag, just essentially red flag that would bring up.
Sure. And
could possibly kind of derail the entire pathway.
And that's the thing is that the a bunch of the therapists that I spoke to, even the ones who were more liberal but not themselves kinky, right? Had that sort of they were telling on themselves about how much difficulty they had with their clients. And I said, but you're also, especially if you're doing couples therapy, the majority of people they're seeing are folks where they have an unevenly yoked relationship, right? You've got one person who's like, I need this thing in my life, and the other person's going, I don't know how I feel about that, or no, I'm not going to do that because you're a pervert. And they're trying to work the ideas that they're trying to work through or past their SM inclinations in order to save, salvage, repair, renew a relationship. Those folks are very different than those of us who, for example, if I were to walk in, just off the top of my head to tell myself, if I were to walk into therapy today, I would not want to have to explain like my cyclical, like kickstart into depressive mode. 'Cause I'm like, oh my God, I hate being single. 'Cause it's not just being single, it's also feeling directionless in a larger sense. 'Cause as a person who identifies as a property submissive slave type person, having no owner is like, ah, fuck. It's just a terrible thing. So if I were to walk into the therapist's office, I don't want to talk about whether or not being owned is cool. I want to talk about coping mechanisms for not feeling like a loser. And so having that shorthand, having that shared experience, having a respect for the choices that I have made will be super critical. And I really do believe that if there are ways for those of us who are kinky, who are inclined to help other people, to find programs like this that will enable us to be peer counselors in a way that's organized and helpful versus random and catch as catch can, that's fucking fantastic.
Completely. Now I don't want to position this particular training program that I'm looking into as being like, hey, this is the place where the kinky people go. Like, I have no idea how they'll feel about me
Right.
as an out person of kink, positioning that as my main reason why I want to train at their school. Like, they will have to recognize it. And I think this is, regardless of the state of the DSM, this is going to be a challenge for educational organizations and training or organizations across, Canada and the US, probably across, like, around the world, really, when it comes down to it, is there has to be a change there of these are people. Well, that even sounds bad, that language that I started with. This is these people. It is there is value in bringing people of this subculture into our training program because of the alternate worldview slash philosophy, or alternately informed worldview slash philosophy that they will bring to the practice of therapy. The other thing that I found interesting about this particular program is that you have to be in therapy yourself for the 3 years of the program. And this is really interesting to me because I've never felt a pull towards going to therapy. So I'm fascinated to actually sit down with someone and say, so I have to do this for school, but I'm but but I'm going to take it seriously because I recognize that this is part of the process, that I can't be a genuine help to other people if I don't have my own shit together. So I'm prepared to be there and present and engaged in whatever therapy path has to happen. It's kind of like a constant tune-up. Like, you get your shit together so that you can help other people get their shit together. But what will be interesting for me, I think, is finding the right therapist for me.
And it's I will say, in addition to the getting your shit together part, you might not have any catastrophic shit you need to get together. You might be doing quite well. But it also it tunes up the sympathy empathy loop, I think, to be on the other side of the situation, to know what that vulnerability feels like. And it also gives you the opportunity, once you do start your practice, that you are not starting from scratch with your own therapy, because I guarantee you there's no therapist I know who doesn't have a therapist. And that's just because once you start dealing with other people's shit, you will want to talk to someone else about it. And the fact is, you can't really talk to your friends about it because that would be a confidentiality violation. You can talk to another therapist about anything one of your patients is talking about, as long as you don't double dis you know, as long as you don't disclose and reveal, you know, someone's personal information, but you can say, oh my God, in this session, and they said this, and this is what that brought up for me, and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's valuable in that way, sort of as a peer-to-peer thing.
And that's a value that I totally recognize and am interested in. I'm interested in engaging in that and exploring that and seeing how that changes me as a person. Like my perception of myself is that I am somebody who's done a lot of work on himself in order to be able to live the kind of life that I live.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much of that work is actually valid. Like I don't know if I'm just sort of fooling myself. Maybe it's all entirely valid, and it'll be interesting to sit across from somebody and talk about the way that I think about myself, the work that I've done on myself, how I see myself moving through space, how I see myself interacting with other people, and just sort of my general philosophies of life, to sit across from somebody and say, here's where I'm at, here's what I'm thinking about. Not to then say, and now it's your turn to pick it apart, but certainly, like, I'm interested in, okay, my cat is freaking out. I'm interested in
a little bug going. I'm like, I think Coco's having a moment.
You ever have a cat and that there's that time at night?
Oh, dude, are you kidding? That's a cat.
When they just start
bugging,
running back and forth.
Looking out.
Yeah, that is what she's doing right now. But I want to, okay, so hang on. I want to bring this into something, because what you said before, it's very important for a therapist in training and in practice to also be in therapy, because it increases, as you've said, the sort of sympathy and empathy quotient to know what it's like to sit in the chair.
Right.
Right? To be on both sides of that dynamic. Can you guess where this is going?
No. Yes.
Okay.
I was like, is this going to be like a switching thing?
It's not going to be a switching thing, but it is going to be a question about, or a sort of a lead into the discussion of something that I've heard bandied around quite a bit, both in writing and in conversation, is the idea that in order for one to be a good dominant, let's say, one has to spend some time as a submissive.
Right. So that's kind of is a switching thing, sort of.
I guess it's sort of a switching thing, but it's not about being a switch.
Right. No. It's about shared experience.
Again, it's about shared experience. Yes. So in order to be a good top, you probably should bottom at some point. In order to be a good bottom, you probably should top.
Yeah.
Although I have to say that is the much more rare position that I've heard taken.
Which is the
It's more rare for me to hear somebody to say, if you want to be a good bottom, you should spend some time topping.
Yeah, and actually, I'm going to make a note about that, because I actually wrote about that, because I had this like crazy epiphany about, because you're right. It's not, bottoms are not necessarily encouraged to top. Or submissives or slaves to master or dominate. Mm-hmm. And you get so many people who are just like, well, it's against my nature. I would never do it. You know, uber super domly dom. And I'm just like, you know what? You need to know what service feels like. You need to understand that part of what you do as a dominant is to create a service environment. And you are in service to that environment. But again, larger issue. But I did. I wrote this, you know, I took this class with Barbara Corellis, and I'll put a link so you can read the article so I don't have to go into detail about it.
Cool.
But what I realized in this experience of having a dominant moment with another submissive person was I saw so clearly what it is to have that degree of vulnerability in front of me and sort of just poured out for me. And I realized how little value so many people place in that. I realized how I had not realized the degree to which I was offering this amazing piece of myself or entirety of myself to someone else. Like, all this shit came up in a 10-minute exercise doing some shit that I would, sorry, hold on. The dog needs to be let out. I'm dog sitting. for all those who don't know. And so the dog has a little signal that he uses when he needs to go to the potty. So he's of course like, I need to go to the potty.
And I was hearing this the squeaking in the
Oh, you're kidding.
background.
Yes, that's a dog toy.
Yeah.
Undermining my authority. You will respect my authority, except not as a squeaky toy.
I figure that it was a squeaky toy and not, for some strange reason, the noise that the dog makes.
Yeah, because the dog is like this tiny squeaky thing. But yeah, and you're right. And I do encourage folks to try as much as they can to have the sensation of what that is like on the other side of the stick, on the other end of the dynamic, because it does give you a much deeper and richer and fuller experience all around, you know. And obviously the model of therapy sees that. The fact of the matter is, for example, you know, if you are being trained in the military, you get hit with a lot of stuff. They beat the crap out of you. They spray you with pepper spray, so you know what that feels like. And you get tased. Okay, first of all, go to YouTube and look up cops being tased, because I could watch those videos for hours.
I have watched a few of them, and
That
I have never been particularly pulled to electrical play, but there's something about watching somebody drop that quickly.
There's one video where they have like 10 cops holding hands, or like their arms are linked together, and they like just tase the first dude, and they all go down.
Okay, I didn't see that one. I'm gonna
Was
have to
just
check
like,
that one.
yes, this is so fucking badass. But to get serious again, the
Right,
large
sorry.
value in that exercise is
There is totally value in being able to see from the other side of what you're experiencing
exactly.
without question, right? And if for no other reason, it gives you a, it gives you it for no other reason, it gets you out of your own head for a short amount of time. And I think that's really valuable. But do I believe that it's an imperative? And do I think that it should be positioned as an imperative?
You know what? I'm moving towards that, and I'll tell you why. I am so tired of the like, your kink is okay being used to justify all kinds of, whoa, hey, that's my shirt. The dog just galloped by with my shirt.
So this is fascinating. For anybody who was able to hear our last sprawling podcast, every so often you would hear Coco, my cat, come up to the microphone, or she'd run by behind me, and most of what you would hear from Coco was something that sounded a bit like meh, meh, meh. There were no squeak toys.
There was no shirt theft.
There was no shirt theft.
There was no, hey, I have to go to the potty, ringing the bell
Yeah.
thing. Oh my God, I'm telling
Very.
you, people who have dogs are the bravest individuals ever. I'm like, how do you just like, people's like, oh yeah, I just got a puppy. I'm like, oh my God, that stuff just changed. It's like the next 15 years of your life committed to this creature. Hilarity. Hilarity ensues.
Gross.
Okay, so
Literally.
we're looking at with at a 3 minute wind down for our casual session of talking about why therapy is super awesome. So
Therapy, yeah. Therapy is super awesome. The idea of kink identified folks and out kink identified folks training to be therapists or counselors, psychotherapists, however you want to say it, I think creates a huge, important, valuable resource for people inside of the kink confederation, to use your term.
Catching on, folks.
I am on board. Because if for no other reason, it allows them to feel like I can go and talk about that which is a challenge for me, and not feel like I will be automatically pathologized for this super important, healthy, rewarding part of my life.
Exactly. And I do appreciate the fact that there are shifts in the DSM, which is the the manual that therapists use to gauge whether or not they're going to decide that we're sick and whether or not we deserve help, right? Because there's that manual also is used to classify various mental issues and illnesses and situations and all of that kind of thing. So that's really super awesome and great. And I do appreciate the fact that there are so many of us out there who, in our own small way, are helping to turn the tide and to re-educate the people who are out there making these calls and making these decisions, right? So.